Broadcasting live from the Business Radio X studios in Atlanta, Georgia, it's time for Atlanta Business Radio, spotlighting the city's best businesses and the people who lead them.
Discussions in this show should not be construed as specific recommendations or investment advice. Always consult with your investment professional before making important investment decisions. Securities offered through Cambridge Investment Research Incorporated, a registered broker-dealer, member, FINRA/SIPC. Registered representative, securities offered through Cambridge Investment Research Incorporated, a broker-dealer, member, FINRA/SIPC. Investment advisor representative, Cambridge Investment Research Advisors Incorporated, a registered investment advisor. Fujiyama Wealth Management and Cambridge are not affiliated.
Lee Cantor here with Katie Galley and Junko Horvath. This is another episode of Junko's Health, Wealth, and Happiness Hour, and it's brought to you by our good friends of Fujiyama Wealth Management. Welcome, Junko.
Thank you.
How are you? Did you have
great.
Your voice a very soft-spoken today?
A little bit.
Too much partying?
Too much partying. Yeah, that's right.
So now you got a great crew with you today. Who do you have?
So I have great guest, Karen Cohen, co-founder and the CEO of Omega Inc. And then Kara Conberry, Senior Assistant District Attorney at Fulton County DA office.
Wow, this is going to be
you.
Fun.
Welcome.
Hello.
So who do you want to start with?
Okay, I'm going to start with Karen. And hi, Karen. How are you?
Oh, I'm great, Junko.
Great. So I want to ask first, what exactly do you do?
I have developed, designed and developed a device that detects impairment from any cause, whether it's drugs or a medical condition.
Wow. That's amazing.
Thank you.
When did you do that?
Well, I started in 2013, the end of 2013, and it's been an ongoing process since then.
And why did you start? You had a kind of background? Or
no, not at all. What happened was my daughter was in a terrible car accident that was substance involved. And I wasn't there to help. I was a parent who really had no ability to do anything to help or to stop it. And I felt that there wasn't enough being done, and I wanted to make a change. Lives are lost on a daily basis because of car accidents, because people have used poor judgment and used alcohol or drugs and then entered a vehicle and drove.
Wow. So your daughter okay?
She is. She's fine. She had a lacerated liver and some broken bones and lacerations, but otherwise she's great.
Wow. So tell us more about your device. Like, so what, so after your daughter's accident, so you felt like you need to make something, but like I don't have that kind of ability, and I believe you were artist before. How did you?
Well, yes, there are a lot of facets to me and my experience. I grew up a doctor's daughter, so I had a lot of exposure to medicine, and I spent years in hospitals working through high school and college. But my true love was art and photography and digital photography in particular. And so I have a lot of experience with image processing. It dawned on me that I knew from past experience that when the central nervous system is compromised, it shows up in the eyes. Mm. And if I could harvest that information, I would be able to tell in advance whether somebody was impaired or not, and then be able to stop them from getting into a vehicle and turning it on. The original idea was that it was going to be an ignition interlock device. Mm. However, it can be used not only proactively, but on a law enforcement side for being able to determine probable cause, particularly from drugs that don't show up quite the same way on tests that look at body fluids and analytes or metabolites. So in order to establish probable cause, which, as Kara will probably tell you, is the legal imperative for issuing a warrant for a blood test or an arrest, this will do it.
So
that's awesome.
Thank you.
It's amazing. And then my question is that at which point people wear your device? Like, because if somebody starts driving, right, and they can start the car under the current circumstances, so anybody can go with the opioid or DUI into the car and start driving. So they have to be caught by police to be tested or...
Well, no. I mean, the device can be used proactively before you turn on the ignition. And what happens is you test if we can get car manufacturers to approve. What will happen is, we can either hardwire it or we can use a computer interface, because all cars now have computers on board. So we can then plug into their computer. If they cannot pass the test, the car won't start.
That's wonderful.
Could it be used for people that were maybe are chronic abusers? Then that could be part of their sentence, is that they have to use that device?
Oh, absolutely.
Yes.
Yes. Kara will tell you what the laws are now. I'm perfectly familiar with them. And yes, absolutely. Chronic abusers generally do, by court order, have to use an interlock device.
Mm-hmm. Mm. But for the person that is the typical person, it would be more for the police to use it as a way to see if they are impaired in some manner?
Yes, certainly. We designed it that way, and our design provides hard evidence.
Is it small? Is it big? Like what?
It's based on a virtual reality headset.
So like goggle type?
Yes. It is a virtual reality headset, although the only part of it that's actually using virtual reality is the lack of convergence test, where something moves toward your face and you have to focus on it and actually cross your eyes.
Oh, how long do you have to wear that?
Well, the test runs about 5 minutes. Mm. That's all. Mm-hmm. Assuming that somebody is not so intoxicated that they can't follow instructions. That's not our problem. That's their problem.
Right.
And the police already know exactly how to deal with those people.
So now for you in getting this to market, from coming up with the idea to getting it to market, was that the first time you had a kind of that type of venture?
Oh, yes. This is totally new for me. I have had several small businesses in the past, but something of this magnitude is an enormous undertaking, and it's a daily learning experience.
Yeah, it's amazing. Mm-hmm.
Well, this is a good example of this is how kind of new ideas happen, right? You come from one disparate as an artist and visual artist and using technology in this way, and then having this desire to solve a problem, and you combine kind of both of those in a unique way that anybody in any one of those industries may not have been able to connect those dots, but you were able to connect the dots.
Yes. Yeah. That's what I feel. If I have a superpower at all, it's connecting the dots. So yes. I feel like I am exactly where I am supposed to be at this particular place in my life.
Right, because only somebody with your specific background would have been able to connect those two dots together.
Yes, I think that's true.
Wow, so was that enlightening, or did you feel now I have to do this, a sense of responsibility that because you are uniquely qualified for this adventure?
Yes, I do feel obligated. I am extremely passionate about this, not only because this is a lifesaver, mm-hmm. or it certainly will be, but because, yes, it was close to me because I am probably one of the few people who are in the position to have gotten here in the first place. And it needs to be done.
And then how do you handle the... all of the hurdles that are in front of you, because you're not only are you starting from scratch an idea that's creating a product, now you have to also deal with a lot of bureaucracy to get it implemented into the system.
Yes, all of that is true. We have been lucky enough to have gotten the support of Glenn Davis of the Colorado Department of Transportation. He's the safety manager, and he's called the pot or the marijuana whisperer. He has more experience in the field of drug impairment.
So this is impairment of any kind. So it doesn't matter, alcohol, opioids, marijuana.
That's correct. Anything that will impair the central nervous system will show signs in the optic nerve and the behavior of the eyes.
Interesting. So what happens if they're not under DUI or opioid, but like personality is like crazy? And
well, we can tell the difference between, say, a medical condition and a drug induced condition. We can also identify aberrant eye conditions, congenital eye conditions, and that would normally invalidate the testing process.
I see. And so what's the accuracy rate?
Well, that's still to be determined. Mm-hmm. One of the things that we want to do, because what is observable is certainly easy enough to detect. What may not be quite as observable, say the difference between a blood alcohol content of 0.08% versus 0.05%, we want to try to be in the forefront of that testing process and research. So those are the things that we're dealing with now.
So you're doing the research and getting all that data?
Yes.
For the reliability?
As a matter of fact, we are also fortunate to have on board a fellow by the name of Matt Myers, who runs the DRE Training Center in Peachtree City for the state of Georgia. And he's going to be assisting us with some of our testing as well.
Now, how have you handled kind of the ups and downs of this adventure? Do you have a support network around you?
I do. I have family and friends, certainly. And there are professionals out there who are so supportive of the work that we're doing that almost on a daily basis, I'm in contact with them. And they're big cheerleaders for us because there's nothing else out there. There is no device that assists officers, law enforcement, determine what is and is not impairment. There's no proof, and that's what we do. We come in and we give them the proof to support their judgment.
I see.
Yeah, great. Yes.
So that's fantastic. And then to do that, you got some funding.
We did. We have initial funding up to close to $500,000. Mm-hmm. And of course, we're looking for more.
I see.
Money is always, always a challenge.
And that's another job unto itself, right?
Of course. Yes, it is.
Yeah, that's right. And but opioid case, I believe it's getting more and more, no?
Yeah.
I think. Yes.
And you think that that's related to the marijuana being legal in...
No, I think opioids is a totally different thing. People have become addicted to opioids because of pain management.
I see.
It's not the drug. Really used. It is, and Kara will probably address this better than I, but the opioid crisis is really one of pain management rather than mm-hmm. recreational use, although it is used that way. Mm-hmm. But marijuana is a really squirrely kind of drug and doesn't have the same impairment signs as any other drug. And you cannot tell with marijuana, no matter how much marijuana is actually in the system, you can't tell whether that is actually impairing them because of the way it metabolizes. And so what we're looking for is real time. You know, are they impaired right now? We don't care what they did.
But your
last
test
night.
Is more behaviorally, right? It's not a... It's not like in my blood there's X amount of whatever that I'm looking for that shows I'm impaired. Yours is saying their eye movement isn't reacting to certain stimuli.
That's correct. That's correct. Well, when we talk about behavioral, all of this is involuntary behaviors mm-hmm. of the central nervous system. So, no, I mean, you can have a huge amount of marijuana metabolites in your system, but that does not prove whether or not you're impaired. Our device can give you a lot of significant information from which you can draw that conclusion.
Can it tell, like, without having some baseline of how you know that I am normally, like you can tell if I put this on right now and I'm not impaired at all, I'll have some reaction and some score or however the machine works, right?
Well, yes.
Or it doesn't
matter. You will actually, the test is pretty much binary. Either the signs exist or they don't.
Uh-huh.
So if they don't exist, then the law enforcement officer has to look for something else. But if they do exist, then there's cause for them to arrest you or to require a blood test.
And that's the purpose of the device, is to know one of those two things.
Yes. Yes, of course.
Right.
We don't really care what the impairment is. You should not be driving while
right.
you're impaired.
Exactly.
Yeah. Yes.
That's amazing. So that your device could save a lot of people, you know, they're caused by those, impaired people that just, killing regular people.
And an interesting statistic is 1 in 4 people driving at night is impaired.
Wow. 1 of 4.
One of
That's
four.
A lot.
25%.
Wow.
Yes.
I didn't know that.
Yes.
Scary.
It is frightening.
How could you possibly get that number?
Mad. Mothers Against Drunk Driving has all of those statistics.
But how could they know that?
I don't know, but they get their statistics from all of the various organizations that keep track of these.
Is that just drunk driving, or that's any type of impairment?
No, any type of impairment.
Yeah, if you go to their website, there are lots of statistics I found. Very interesting.
Yeah, well, that's horrific.
They compile statistics by state, by accident. The statistics are all there. And I don't know what I'm not a statistician,
right.
so I don't know what the metrics are that allow them to do this, but yes, 1 in 4, 25% of nighttime drivers are impaired in some way.
So now, when you were taking on this venture with, your child was kind of the catalyst, I guess, for this, right?
Yes.
If she didn't do this, you probably wouldn't have gone in this direction, right?
Yes.
So is she involved, or is your family involved in this?
Everybody's involved, of course.
So you roped everyone in.
Oh, yeah. It's a worthwhile project.
Right. So is that now everybody's kind of life work is this now, or everybody's got side hustles real jobs?
Everybody has real jobs. And this is, you know, moms and, relative work. But everybody is involved in some way. Either by helping to raise capital or, make phone calls, whatever it is in their spare time. Everybody's right. behind it. Well, you can understand just how, what the magnitude of this is, mm-hmm. and it has a tremendous application across the board, whether it's business and industry. Imagine all of the people who are in at-risk professions.
Right.
Yes. Yeah. Insurance companies want them to be drug free.
Sure.
But in states where marijuana is legal, either medically or recreationally, how do you determine? So impairment detection is the way. And since the central nervous system is responsible for both physical and cognitive response, that's absolutely the metrics that we need to use.
Now, when you're doing a venture like this, and this is, I mean, starting any business is a high risk venture, right? So in your family's portfolio, there's this part of it. How did you weigh that when you were deciding whether to kind of invest this type of time and energy and resources into going down this path? Was it because the cause was so just and right that it was worth putting? I mean, you're putting, there's an opportunity cost of your time doing this, and it's a financial cost because you're investing a lot of resources into this project.
Exactly. I think this is, and I think will always be, as long as I'm involved in it, a labor of love. And the more I researched it, the more I understood just how large it was, not just in being able to save lives, but save money, save time, save money, and also make it stick in court.
Right. And to get these people that are the chronic abusers off the street so that they're not hurting anybody else.
Exactly.
So let me ask you some personal questions.
Sure.
That we are talking about what you do, so who you are. And what was your family like around the dinner table when you were growing up?
Oh, my gosh. It was a combination of intellectual pursuits and a recap of people's days and, you know, their individual lives, whether it was school or my dad's work or my mom. My mom was very active in the ACLU, you know, so she came home with great stories as well.
Yeah.
So we talked about politics. We talked about medicine. We talked about school. We talked about everything.
Interesting. And most people have had at least one person who really seems to make a difference in your in their lives. And who was that person for you?
Well, this is a person that I did not know personally, but made the greatest impact on my life, and that was Maya Angelou. Maya Angelou, if you remember, was a single mother who had no resources whatsoever, and armed with nothing but her intellect and her ability to write, became a celebrity and a mentor to many women in particular. And she gave me one piece of advice that I have not forgotten, and I wish I had gotten it much sooner in my life, and that is, when people show you who they are, believe them.
And that's a great example of a mentor. It doesn't have to be somebody you personally know. It could be somebody that impacts you greatly. It could be a writer. It could be, and, you know, it doesn't have to be a person that's a personal relationship, but they can have a large impact on your life.
Yes. Yes.
And what does the future hold for you now?
Well, I see the future as being very, very bright, but very, very busy. I'm still getting this business off the ground. We're still considered a startup company. We're not yet in revenue. We're still preparing for that. And the longer we go, the more responsibility it seems to engender. And so I'm looking forward to enlarging the group of also passionate followers and participants who understand what this really means.
Great. Do you see yourself differently?
Yes. Yes, I do. There are times when I feel that business requires hard decisions that I've never really had to make before. And I have to prepare myself and steel myself to do that. But it's a growing opportunity for me. And that's, I'm not young.
No, you're very young.
Oh, thank you. I'm not young. So for me, I really want to just continue to grow as a person, as a human being, and develop whatever potential I still have.
Great.
Do you see yourself still as an artist, an entrepreneur as an artist, or is everything blurred at this point?
No, I still see myself as an artist, and I will, when I have the time, get back to it.
But is your business like a piece of art? Because you started from nothing.
You know, until you mentioned it, no, I didn't consider it that, but I certainly could. And I think that after the show, I'm going to give it some consideration.
Great. So what do you do to keep or increase your health, wealth, and happiness?
I used to tell my children that there were three things that they needed to be happy. And there still are only three things that you need to be happy. Everything else is subtext. You have to have something to do that's meaningful, someone to love, and something to look forward to.
I love that.
Thank you. Great. I do too.
Now she's mentoring other people with that wisdom.
Lots of wisdom. Yeah, great.
So now if somebody wanted to learn more about your work, what's the best way to do that?
Well, we have a website, omegainc.com, and we have, you can find us on Facebook. We are facebook.com/visualizer.
And that's the name of the product?
Yes, the product is Visualizer.
Right, the company is Omega
Inc. Right. Yes.
And then, so how do you spell that? It's spelled
O-M-I-G-A.
And Visualizer is spelled a little
It's
wacky.
A little different. Yeah, a little
to get the URL, probably.
Yes, exactly. V-I-S-U-L-Y-Z-E-R.
Well, Karen, thank you so much for sharing your story today.
Thank you, Lee, and thank you, Junko.
You're welcome. Thank you for coming.
All right, Junko, who you got next?
Next is Kara Convery. Senior Assistant District Attorney at the Fulton County District Attorney's Office. Thank you for coming, Kara.
Thank you for having me.
So, what exactly do you do for the Fulton County?
So, like you said, I'm a Senior Assistant District Attorney for the DA's office in Fulton County. And so what that means is that I am one of a bunch of assistants that work for the elected DA in Fulton County, who is Paul L. Howard, Jr., and as one of his assistants, I'm assigned to a unit in our office called the Major Crimes Division. And there I prosecute mostly murders and homicide investigations, as well as DUI cases that involve death or serious injury.
Sounds so serious.
It is. It's important work.
It is.
Yeah.
It is.
How long have you been doing that?
So I've been with the district attorney's office in Fulton County for about 4 years now. And prior to that, I work for the Cobb County Solicitor's Office, also doing DUI prosecution. So a lot of the things that Karen said about law enforcement and sort of what lies ahead in the field of DUI investigation is really spot on. So it's an exciting time to have a lot of these innovations going on, because there unfortunately really is a need.
Mm-hmm. Is the problem getting worse?
In my opinion, yes. Just not necessarily through one channel, not necessarily as a result of alcohol, a result of opiates, but just exposure to any type of intoxicant that's going to impair a driver. And, you know, last night before I came here, I was working on a serious injury investigation that happened, you know, right out between 75 and 85, where someone nearly lost their life. They're going to be permanently paralyzed as a result of their injuries that they sustained. The driver is impaired by alcohol. And you just look at the scene and see how many people are out there as a part of what they do, trying to save lives and avoid this situation. It's just, it's encouraging to hear that people are looking for ways to slow that or stop that.
Now, what do you attribute the I mean, everybody, you would think, knows not to do this. And then, but we're still doing this. Mm-hmm. Like, is this just a human thing that we're just going to always do this?
I think there's an element of that. Unfortunately, there's an element of that. Part of what an intoxicant is, it's a central nervous system depressant. So inherently, as part of that, it means it's going to affect your decision making.
Right.
Now, with the innovation of Uber and with so many options of a way to get home safe, it's less justifiable, less and less justifiable. The other thing is, I think a lot of people have not been caught and a lot of people have not been touched personally by a tragedy that involves impaired driving. For me, I see the wake of that all the time through investigations and through pictures that you'll never forget. And so a lot of times it's too late. So it really starts much, much earlier in the decision-making process before that.
Hmm. Now, for you, when you deal with this every day, so like you, I'm sure couldn't imagine yourself putting yourself in that position. Is that something that you have to really drill down to young people before they even learn how to drive? Or, I mean, to me, it's such a... I can't even understand the thought process that you would put yourself in this situation. I understand that doing the activity is going to affect your decision making.
Sure.
But I also understand that everybody knows that it's wrong and you shouldn't do it. I mean, it's just hard for me intellectually to understand the thought process of how it happens.
Yeah, I think it starts early as you're learning to drive and getting exposed to, your friends starting to drive and being on the road and just making it, sending a message through our community and the people that are interacting with other drivers that this is not something that our society is going to tolerate or justify or be okay with. A lot of it is going to happen, unfortunately, on the law enforcement side. And sometimes that means getting pulled over, getting a DUI when maybe you don't cause an injury or get in an accident. But sometimes that message is a powerful one as well.
So now, have you seen people's behavior change? Like they get arrested and then, oh, they never do it again. I mean, like you're seeing towards the tail end of this.
Yeah.
But
I've seen both ways.
Right. Are there things that can impact this that you're seeing that are effective?
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely.
I mean, I would think Uber is the most effective. Like that had to have lowered DUIs.
I think definitely. I don't know the statistics on that, but without a doubt, absolutely it has. I think I've seen people go through the arrest and sort of criminal justice process that comes with a DUI, and absolutely that changes them. And it changes the people in their family and their support system. I think it's a learning experience for a lot of people to go through that, especially in a non-accident, non-serious injury situation. Unfortunately, we see people who are repeat offenders in this type of situation, who have ignition interlock devices on their cars and still find a way to get behind the wheel of a vehicle and risk not only their lives, but everyone else on the roadway, which is why these type of crimes are so dangerous, because you take a problem or a choice that is your own. And when you get behind the wheel of really a weapon at that point, when you're impaired, you make it everybody's problem.
Is it that the penalty isn't high enough that they can be repeat offenders, or we as a society are like, oh, well, that's just not that big of a deal? I mean, until it becomes a big deal?
Combination of things. For some people, maybe the consequence isn't severe enough to kind of send you a message. But for some people, a DUI, for a lot of people, I think a DUI and the punishment and the consequences that come with it are absolutely life-changing. So, like a lot of things in the law, it's really a combination of factors, I think. And a lot of it is what we say about that type of crime as a community. And a lot of it is just personally how you're reacting to, are these consequences affecting my life? My license is suspended. Maybe I had to spend a couple of days in jail. For a lot of people, that is the wake up call that they need.
Now, when you were younger, did you always think that you would get in this side of the law? Like you would get involved as in the DA and that kind of stuff?
I did. Yeah, I did. Early in law school, I realized that I had a passion for criminal law and just being in the courtroom. To me, this is the most exciting part of the legal world. Once I started in prosecution with Cobb County, I just realized how thankful that I was to wake up and feel like, you know, I'm doing something that can hopefully, help somebody in some way.
Did you think of any other law, or this was the only thing you?
You know, most people go through, I am not the normal. Most people go through a variety of areas of the law, and I have so many friends that do totally different work from me and absolutely love it. But for me, this is the only thing that I felt passionate about. So I'm lucky to be able to do it.
So then what's like in your head, the career path, like where do you see yourself in 5 years or 10 years?
So right now, being with the Fulton County DA's office, I feel really lucky to be kind of at the forefront of a lot of the most important prosecutions we have going on in the state right now. So I feel like I'm where I'm supposed to be right now. It's absolutely crazy in Fulton County, but it's such important work. And it's, for me, it's really satisfying. So for the next few years, I definitely see myself in my office working on the prosecution of a lot of really serious and pending murders going on right now. But eventually, maybe another type of work, potentially in gang prosecution elsewhere, and maybe even
so those
on
are
level.
Within those are specialties. Like you can specialize in DUI, or I can specialize in gang.
You can. You absolutely can.
Really?
Sometimes that just happens as a result of the
right.
cases
One
you get assigned
kind of
and what you get
bleeds
exposed
into
to.
Another thing.
Right, what you get passionate about as a result of your life experiences. In my office, at the DA's office, we are divided into units, so I get a lot of exposure. All my cases almost are homicides. But there's a unit, that involves white-collar crime. We have a gang prosecution unit. We have crimes against women and children that deal exclusively with...
So like the TV shows?
Yes, just like that. Just like that. So, and then as a result of just the cases that are coming across your desk, you find little niches where you feel passionate about, or you have an experience like Karen.
Is that common that somebody has an experience or something... that traumatic happened and you're like, I want to fix this or do my part to put a dent in it?
I think it is common. People connect with individual experiences we see in our cases. I see prosecutors I work with all the time finding connections with victims of crime and feeling really driven to try to do the best work that they can
to
right the wrong and to give somebody a sense of closure if they can.
Now, is the gang problem, is that an area that's getting worse?
Yes, in my opinion, yes. I think the gang problem is a whole separate radio conversation. Probably could go on forever about that. But
because it's these people want to be part of a group, right, in a community, and this community is accepting them and is
there's some
with
of
a
that.
Negative.
And it starts at a shockingly young age. You'd be,
like 5 years old or the infants, like they're brought up in that environment,
I mean,
and that just is their normal, right?
Yeah, I think as soon as you are kind of exposed to things in your community, wherever that problem is in your community, sometimes it's once you get into a school system, unfortunately, sometimes it's just in your immediate neighborhood, but a huge part of it is what you said, just acceptance into a group.
And they're so hungry for that, and if they're not getting it in their home, then they're going to find it somewhere else because humans like to socialize and be
you're
part
right.
of groups.
You're right.
So that must be an extremely difficult challenge for law enforcement or just the public in general.
Yeah, absolutely. We're really trying to, the solution to that is ever evolving. And I know right now in Atlanta, law enforcement, my office, and a lot of different agencies are working on trying to kind of curb that trend. So
now as this is your life now, right? This is what do you do to kind of decompress? How do you kind of create a balance in your life?
I'm working on being better about that.
Is it? Because it can be all, it seems like it would never end. Your work can never end,
consuming.
Right?
It's consuming. It's absolutely consuming. You don't have to do it that way. there are people in my office who are better at the balance than I am, and I'm trying to constantly improve that. But it's consuming work because it never stops. And, I just am constantly thinking about if I am the family of a victim, I would want somebody working as hard as I do on every single case. And, they're all going through something that's really the hardest thing they've ever been through.
Right.
So each individual situation is the most important thing for that family. So it's hard to find balance. But I try to. And so when I leave the office, I try to really leave the office. That means I stay a little later. But for me, I'm better that when I close that door there, I try to be at home mentally, physically, as much as possible.
Do you do like sports or do anything physical to kind of get all
that?
Yeah,
try to run as much as possible. I'm into Orange Theory. You know, that's 60 minutes where I'm so tired, I can't think about anything
else.
Right. But yeah, that's important. And I see a lot of people in my office doing different things to try to find that balance. But it's critical, or else you just.
Well, and it's also the rush of success must be so high. The highs must be so high and the lows must be so low.
Yep.
It has to be hard to emotionally manage that.
It is a lot. You know, I told someone the other day that the feeling that you get after a jury walks into the room with a verdict and the few seconds you have before they read what's on that paper, there's really, you can't compare that or describe that. I mean, you just feel like you don't lock your knees. You're about to pass out right before they read.
Because it could be anything. At that point, it could be anything.
Right.
And then after it happens, then it's
just
a relief for.
Yeah. And it's never, for me, at least in what I do, it's never joy. I mean,
right.
You're sending someone is going to prison as a result right. of a verdict in your favor. And so it's a heavy, sad thing. But the feeling that you get from a family member who lost somebody who's been through something traumatic, just putting their arms around you and
then
you can
having
feel
closure.
Them. Yeah. There's nothing like that.
Right.
There's nothing like that.
Well, Karen has one question. To you.
Karen.
Oh. Ooh, okay.
Wow, jumping back in here. Get in here. Lean in there. Got to get close to the mic.
I'm sorry. Actually, this goes back to the DUI.
Sure.
And naturally.
Of course.
Sorry. I noticed that my son now, because of all of this, makes the decision before he's intoxicated.
Yeah.
Which really is the crux of the matter. So Uber and Lyft really become an option before your judgment is impaired. Do you find that that's really the case? Are people actually making the decision, I plan on drinking tonight, therefore I'm going to take Uber?
Yeah, absolutely. I think that's happening more and more. And just speaking for myself and my own, you know, social interactions with friends, or, you know, if my husband and I went to a wedding the other weekend, and we just decided, why would we even have to go through the decision-making process of if we've had a drink, we're just going to Uber there and take that out of the equation. And I ended up not really drinking on that particular night, but it was just so much, it was worth it to just have that part of our
right. It's a peace of mind
decided.
Thing. And it's so convenient. Yeah. That's why it's like silly not to leverage that. It's fairly inexpensive and it just takes that off the board.
And it makes it frustrating when, you know, down the road, a different decision is made and someone's in the middle of 75, 85
right.
fighting for their life, you know. So, yes, I think it's happening more positive for once. You know, that's
so now
and, trending.
What do you have any advice for a young person that would kind of considering a career option? And you chose a career that is, I'm going to, you know, in some ways sacrifice a lot financially. I'm going through all the effort of this one profession, but I'm going to sacrifice for me personally, financially, to choose a path of I'm going to do something for society as a whole. Did that weigh in at all in your decision making, or you were very just focused on I want to help people and be a public servant?
Yeah, I mean, I think deciding to be in the field in general, and then more importantly, what I see with young prosecutors is kind of deciding, okay, is this a year experience for me that I can put on my list and move on? Or is this something that I, you know, see as part of my identity going forward?
Right.
So yeah, it's a part of the decision-making process for a lot of young lawyers and a ton of young prosecutors. And it's an individual. I mean, I think the experience in a DA's office is not like anything else. I would recommend it to absolutely everybody who's in the legal world. I just think it's unique and it makes you get out of your comfort zone on a daily basis. I still get butterflies every time I stand up before a jury. I don't think I ever won't. It puts you in the courtroom doing something that you just don't have a chance to do if you're not in that world. And then once you're in it, it's just an individual decision. For me, it's not a tough call because I get the unique experience of being able to actually be able to tell people that I wake up in the morning excited to get in there and keep doing what I left off on the night before. And not every day is perfect, and I've got complaints about my job like everybody else, but I just really feel rewarded and lucky to be there, because I would want somebody like me, hopefully, there working as hard as they could if I was in that situation.
Now, how do you manage the lows and the downs and the bureaucracy of your work?
Your family at work. So part of the
family. So your family and
your work family.
Your work family.
And your regular family. both, though, because one of the trade-offs about being there so much, we joke on our hallway in major crimes that it's like a dorm because we're there so much. And we all try to find breaks where we can, but you are with a small concentrated group of people that are having this unique experience at the same time as you. And so, if someone comes back after a not guilty verdict or, a tough ruling in the courtroom, we try to be there for each other as much as possible. And that's really what helps me through it. And then of course, my family and my poor family who's in Ohio, they have to hear all my trials before I go to try to call them my legal team. So just relying on other people who have been through the same experience who support you unconditionally, of course.
Yeah, you have to be mentally tough and strong to
go. And it makes you that way if you're not before.
Yeah, and also you really have to love what you do. It's a commitment.
It is a commitment. It is. And that's why the experience for some people, they know right away, oh, I'm not, this isn't going to work for me. And then the opposite, if you love it. So it's a polarizing career.
So who influenced you? Most people have had one person at least that, you know, influenced in their lives. And who was that for you?
So for me, I have kind of a traditional answer, and then I'll give you someone who's still influencing me at work. But I was raised by my mom and very close with growing up, my aunt. So two super strong women who both were entrepreneurs, had careers totally independent of anything else that they had before, something they made for themselves. They both ended up starting and owning home healthcare companies. They were nurses before that. And I just was so lucky to be just kind of exposed to this drive and work ethic from a really young age. They just, you know, if you want something, you work for it. And I got to see the product of that on a daily basis from both of them. So that's something that's really kept me going on hard days in my office. And then now at my office, I get the chance to work with some of the best prosecutors really in the country in Fulton County. I get to work with somebody like Clint Rucker, who has tried, you know, the Brian Nichols case and the Atlanta Public Schools cheating scandal. I just got to be a part of the prosecution team on Tex MacGyver. So I'm constantly exposed to these people who are just legends in what I do. And it just keeps reminding you that still achieving our higher goals are out there in our field. So
great. So what's your philosophy on money? Change the gear, and if you suddenly had so much money that you would never run out, what would you probably do with it?
Well, I think you heard in the earlier question about sacrifices being made as a government employee. I try to manage what I have financially to try to make those decisions ahead of time about things that are important for me, things that I want to commit some financial resources to down the road ahead of time so that I can make whatever adjustments in the current situation that I need to. And if I didn't have a money concern, there was never a worry about money, I never had to work again. I sound so lame, but I really still would be at my office, I think. I would, you know, still be doing what I was doing. Maybe I wouldn't take as many cases. I would just have a few special projects. But I would still be working and wanting to get up every day and have a sense of purpose. Right. I think I would quickly get bored.
Well, when you love what you do and you're passionate about it, it's not really work in the sense that some people have a job that they have to do for money.
It sounds so cliche, but it's true.
Right.
Really,
I mean, it's
way.
Like, I know in here, I'm excited to come to work. Like I can do this every 7 days a week. I mean, this is what energizes me, and it's probably the same for you.
It feels that way. Absolutely.
So my last question, what do you do to keep or increase your health, wealth, and happiness?
It's the balance we talked about, right, which I'm trying to achieve, do better
working
with.
Working on, how's that? Are you, yeah, meditating? What are you doing? Are you,
I was doing making exercising? Fun of my husband the other night for meditating. He says it's really helpful. For me, it's exercising. And I'm always like, oh, I'm exhausted. I tell myself, you know, I deserve the evening
the break,
off.
Right?
I work so late. But I always feel after the workout that, you know, I'm glad I did that. Right. And it just gives you a second to clear your mind. And for me, I need to get back into hot yoga. I was doing that a lot. But anytime that you are, you know, physically working out for that 60 minute or that big chunk of time, it's time that your mind is forced to be clear.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And it's a good recharge.
And it's good to feel physically exhausted. Like, you're probably mentally exhausted all the time, mm-hmm, but physically exhausted, you're probably not. And
yes,
then that level of exercise, that
that's
type of
balances,
intensity,
yeah,
that creates that kind of balance.
Absolutely. Yes.
Great.
So now, if somebody wants to connect with you, the website is the AtlantaFultonCountyDA.org. That's the website for there. But can they connect with you on LinkedIn or something? Is that appropriate?
Yeah,
if there's
absolutely
a young lawyer out there that wants to kind of get some insight?
Sure, sure. And I get a decent amount of that. I get young lawyers, jurors, actually,
really?
Former jurors. Yeah, I've been contacted by a lot of former jurors lately. But it's very cool because you get to hear sort of a unique perspective on,
right, that
experience
probably
you went through
that,
together.
Right?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
I love it.
That's good insight.
And somebody could contact me directly actually at my email, which is just my name at FultonCountyGA.gov. So it's Kara, C-A-R-A, .Convery, C-O-N, like Nancy, V like Victor, E-R-Y.
Good stuff. Well, thank you so much for sharing your story.
Thank you so
thank
much.
You. Thanks,
yeah,
for having me.
For both of you. Yeah, great.
Thank you so much.
And Junko, this is such a gift you're giving our listeners to bring these women together, yeah, for them to share their story. Mm-hmm. And you see the importance of doing work that matters.
Yeah,
right?
It is. Yeah.
That,
and helping so many people. It's
right.
Amazing. And I get energy from them.
Right.
Thank you. Yeah.
All right. That was Junko Horvath. This was Junko's Health, Wealth, and Happiness Hour, brought to you by our good friends at Fujiyama Wealth Management. We will see you all next time.
Discussions in this show should not be construed as specific recommendations or investment advice. Always consult with your investment professional before making important investment decisions. Securities offered through Cambridge Investment Research Incorporated, a registered broker-dealer, member, FINRA/SIPC. Registered representative, securities offered through Cambridge Investment Research Incorporated, a broker-dealer, member, FINRA/SIPC. Investment advisor representative, Cambridge Investment Research Advisors Incorporated, a registered investment advisor. Fujiyama Wealth Management and Cambridge are not affiliated.